thank you for coming. I had the plan for this lecture to talk about two articles that got published in 2016 about maize divination. But since I came here, I realized that perhaps not many people are familiar with Mesoamerican culture and worldview and religion and ritual, so I decided to go a step backwards and present you more a descriptive lecture. So I will go more in the details, and I will go back to my PhD research, which started 10 years ago. And I decided also to include the calendar book, because in order to understand maize divination, we have to link it to the calendar. So this is the origin of maize divination. Once you consult a diviner among the Mije, you cannot just consult the maize. You have to consult also the calendar. So they come together. So this is the calendar. So I will go, because I am an archaeologist, I tend to go back and forth in time, so it's very diachronical, my presentation. Well, the calendar, when the Spaniards arrived to Mesoamerica, you tell me if you cannot hear, because I tend to go to the slide, okay? It was extended in the 16th century all over Mesoamerica, and actually for some scholars, it is a marker to define Mesoamerica as a region, actually. So more or less to the middle of Mexico, to the middle of Central America. So it was extended all over Mesoamerica, although we can trace it back in the early history of Mesoamerica to the 10th century before Christ. And we identify it whenever we find dots, like these ones, dots and bars. These are numerals. And when they are combined with a sign, this is at least a calendrical date. This is a calendrical element. And it is formed by combining 13 numbers and 20 signs. So when you combine these together, you end up with a cycle of 260 days. This means that in order to arrive to the same sign and the same number, you have to go through 260 positions. Now, this is the basis for all other Mesoamerica calendars. There was not just one calendar, but this is the basic one. So they also had a 365 calendar. Then when you combine the 260 with the 365 calendar, you end up with cycles of 52 years. And for example, the Maya developed, probably you heard in 2012, the so-called end of times predicted by the Maya. No, this was created actually by archaeologists and epigraphers, that when they found this stela, they interpreted as, the start of this very long period of time that only the Maya created, not other Mesoamerican people, but only the Maya created, and that we call it the long count date. This long count date is a very big period of time that started, according to archaeologists and not necessarily the Maya, in August 13, 3114 before Christ. And on 2012, we arrived to that very long period of time, and that is called the long count date. The Maya developed these calendars into a major sophistication, and that is why Maya calendar is studied apart. But in the rest, we understand it, and thanks to the historical sources, that this calendar, the 260 day, it was used for historiographical records to name the persons. Actually, for example, people in Mesoamerica were named with that date. So there is a famous hero in the Mixtec area called the Eight Deer. So Eight Deer, that is the calendrical name, Jaguarclaw. And besides, they had a personal name. And of course, it programmed festivities, ceremonies, the market days, and of course it was directed to the divination. And among the Aztecs, so the people here in the center of Mexico, it was used by day keepers, a specialized type of priest, the Tonalpueque, who were those who counted the days. And the Tonalpueque, we think, these codices have been studied for more than 100 years. So now it's more or less understood that that each tonal poet painted their own books. I will pass this around. This is just an example of one of these codices. And there are many Mesoamerican codices, but I'm just referring to a special genre. And those are, now we call it Borgia group codices. And there are only 5 of them left in the world, all of them in European collections and museums. And they handle the calendar, the ritual, and divination. And more or less, this is one example. This is the Codex Laud, but this is another one, the Codex Borgia. And then we see that these are the days. These are the signs of the Mesoamerican basic 260-day calendar. And they are arranged in columns. And here we see a column of days. And in the first row here, this image, so we have the bowl with the feathers on the rim and papers. And this is an eagle that is going down. This is a convention to indicate that self-sacrifices were done and papers were impregnated with that blood. And then the eagle comes down from the sky, drinks that blood, and takes it to the sun. So eagles are related to the sun. So this is an offering to the sun. This is a good prognostication for these days. But we have others, for example, this other one is a death deity, for example, and she's a she because has a skirt, is swallowing a human. So it's kind of not a very good allegory. So these codices, at least in this chapter, are indicating rituals, I mean, so they are indications to develop rituals, but also they are indicating pronostications. Other examples, and so I told you before, the Tonal Poeke developed their own books, and they arranged the periods of time and arranged in different chapters, different combinations of days. And each day is multi-layered, so it has a pronostication, it is also addressed by the influence of one deity, a solar deity, a lunar deity. So it has different layers of pronostication, so it's quite complex, and therefore each of these tonal poeke developed their own book in order to be useful as a mnemonic device, to remember how to use them. And we understand it more or less now that they were used in this pronostication of the calendar, but also in medicine. However, not everything was, or is still not fully understood. So it's not really clear how is the social context, in what occasions they were consulted, and many other symbolisms around the calendar, the worldview. The fascinating thing is that just 2 groups in Mesoamerica, or very few groups, maybe there are more that have other type of calendars, but there are only 2 people in Mesoamerica that still preserve this calendar, and these are the Mije and the Quiche in Guatemala. The Mije in Oaxaca, Mexico, and the Quiche in Guatemala. So that's why in 2007 I got the opportunity to develop this research, and it was at least fascinating that there were these people still preserving this calendar. You have to imagine, since these are repositories of ritual and worldview calendar, these were the first targets of the Spanish conquistadors and missionaries. So they burned almost all the books, and that's why we only have 5 left of them. So it's fascinating after 500 years of colonization and imposing Catholic religion, that still this knowledge of the calendar is still there. So when I was choosing the region to know more about this calendar, and that was the aim, to document the social context around this calendar, I heard about a community that handled this calendar it was handled by women. And that, until that moment, I said, well, this is the community for me. As you can imagine, as me being a woman, it was easier to talk to women. But it also, for me, it was appealing to describe the knowledge this high sophisticated knowledge in women, because the ethnographies that I read are most often not portraying the expertise of men. So for me, that was very fascinating. There was always the chance of me changing of community, but I found myself very fully adapted to this community. And as I told you before, the aim was to document this in its social context and also try to understand it better, how it functioned, but also other links to other symbolisms of worldview, personhood, sacred narratives. The conception of time was also important. So just to share with you some pictures of this town. It's in the south part of Mexico, highly mountainous. It's a very small town, actually. When I arrived there, there were only 400 people living there. And that is because most of the men at that time had migrated to the United States. So it was practically a town of women, old people, and children. And I found myself very, very well adapted. Also, my aim was to learn the language, so I dedicated these 5 years of my research to, well, I lived there, but also learning the language, the Mije or the Ayoc language, which is, well, as you can imagine, there is no book to learn Mije language. So it was a self-didactic experience. I found also that it was a town ruled by women, and all the activities that we expected would be handled by men were handled by these women, like going to the field, cutting the wood, carrying it, clearing the fields for maize, sowing, planting. And maize is a very important, it's the principal maybe agent, not that rules many of the activities around the community. Since this is an agricultural community, you can imagine, well, they are dependent on growing this maize. So what is happening on the field determines what is happening also in the community life. So I also wanted to understand that, so many times I accompanied these ladies to the fields, 3 o'clock in the morning, waking up, making the tortilla, to go on the field, walking 2 hours in order to get to those fields and start sowing. These are extremely strong women. And I would say that maize is not only, well, very important, it's of course a sacred entity in the community, but it is a very demanding seed. I would say that among the domesticates around the world, maize requires a lot of attention all around the year. You need to prepare the field, slash and burn, unweed the field, plant it, and you have to go several times to plant again the maize to assure that you will get a maize plant. And then you have to unweed it, fertilize it, and then you harvest, and then you take it to your home, and then you unseed it, and then you put it on the sun. So you see, this is a very long process in order to every day, 3 times a day, to get your tortilla. I would say, this is the best tortilla I've ever eaten in my life. Native seeds, by the way, in danger now of disappearing because of transgenic maize. So it is, and once you get the seed, you need to boil it with lime, because this is why it is a domesticated, so that is why it's not a grass anymore. So it has a hard layer that you have to destroy. Anyhow, it is sacred, and this is why it is not random. This is the principal tool for diviners, maize. I had to also, well, of course, as I told you before, maize determines the community life, but also the social life, so to say. The festivity calendar is also coinciding with what is happening on the field. And that has already been said by other scholars, that in the past, well, they had certain festivities for certain deities, but once Catholicism was imposed, then they just changed the shape of these Mesoamerican deities with saints. Jesus is not the principal deity in Mesoamerican communities, but are the patron gods or the patron saints. Just to show you pictures about this. And these coincide, as I told you, with specific moments of what is happening in the cycle of Mace. Now, so who are these experts of this time system? As I told you, these were wise timekeepers, experts in medicine, and so that is one of my proposals after leading this experience, that they are connected with medicine. And as you can imagine, this is a highly marginalized community. So there is no health service in the community. In order to get to a, it's not even a hospital, a clinic, you need to drive 2 hours to get to such a, well, hospital services. So these ladies are healers, and they are using this calendar and divination in order to heal. And they are experts also of what I call the coherency of this world. And this world is constituted by what we see right now, but also the other world. In Mesoamerica, it's very common that they name it the underworld. But it is not under, it's just simply a different plane where ancestors live, where divinities live, where everything that we see here has its own spirit and is living in the other world. Even, for example, well, objects, but also hills, have a gender, and they have the shape of a woman, of a man in this other world. But they can understand it, and they are able to see this other world in certain occasions. One of those is during divination. And these ladies are called in the original language Shemaiva Machopa. So She is they, Maipa that divines, and Machopa that counts. So literally these are the persons who count the days and divine with the days. Just a parenthesis here, whenever you want to say, well, what's your name, or Timisum She, you are literally asking, what's your day? No, it's the same word for day is for name, for sun, and festivity. And this is common because the sun is giving you this moment of time that is giving you your identity as well. So reasons for consulting this lady. So as I told you before, it's mainly because you are sick, you feel ill. There are ills that just don't go away, so you consult them. You are worried, you are afflicted, you have lost things. So you also perhaps experience some events that have a certain significance. You went to the field and maybe a snake, well, came across your road, so that is very significant. Or you went hunting and then you encounter a puma, for example. So these are very significant occasions, and these for me are called presages. Or you dreamt the same images, perhaps you dreamt of a puma or you dreamt of an owl. So these are things that will, of course, worry you, and you want to know if they are significant. Then the Shemaive will then ask you, when did you have that dream? When did you saw the snake? And they will connect it with one of these days on the calendar. Or simply you want to ask something. Perhaps the men, for example, that are going to the United States want to just ask for good fortune. So they go to the diviner, go to the Shemaive and ask, what can I do to first assure fortune, to assure a job, and to just be safe? Or there are babies, newly born, and you want to know what is the character of that baby, and the character tendencies for that baby. So this is the calendar, so the 13 numbers with the 20 signs. So you go to Shakov, Honsan, well here, until 13, and you have to go from 1, Ka, 2, 3, 4, and so on. And that's why you end up with this enormous cycle of 260 days. Well, I couldn't find the literal meaning of some of these days because they have been lost in time. Simply, they are very old words. I found some other interesting cases where it's literally a cow or a bull, but according to me, it comes from the words Mr. Ka or Huzca, which are felines. And that is correspondent to the Aztec calendar, because this is in the same position as Jaguar in the Aztec calendar. So these are Aztec calendars. There are some coincidences, although it is not exactly the same. And this talks about also the diversity in Mesoamerica. So by the way, since I knew the calendar, and because I was coming here, I decided to look into the calendar. And today is an 11 kiet, here, 11 ri, in the morning, because the day changes at noon. So at midday, we change from day, and right now we are in a 12 ka, actually, in one of these puma or feline. So to explain, I think what I was able to do with my research was to contribute better in the symbolisms and in these multi-layer significances of the days. So we have, and I am using images of codices to illustrate this, we have a general pronostication of the day. This is the day flower with the goddess Xochiquetzal, but also with the general augury. This is a lady is kneeling, she's grinding corn, but the hand of the grinding stone is broken. So that is not a very good augury, although Xochiquetzal is a very good deity. But it is also telling us the ambiguity between the days. There is no absolute prognostication for the days. There is no, never entirely good and entirely bad day. Actually, in Mije, in the word for bad, doesn't exist in a Yolk language. In order to say that something is bad, you have to deny that is not good, that is good. So it's maybe a slightly linguistically, well, maybe insignificant trait, but I say that that coincides also with the Yolk mentality of the lack of absolutes and fatalism. So, and this also contradicts the Spanish sources, because the Spanish were very clear to say, well, these are the group of the good days and these are the group of the bad days. But that doesn't work. And you can have a day that is maybe good for one thing, maybe pronosticates a good dream, so you don't have to worry if you dreamt with an owl, maybe it is not significant. But maybe for asking you to do a ritual, it is very important. And that is the second layer, no? The one that tells you what to do. And these are numbers, so remember dots and bars stand for numbers. This is the deity. And can anybody recognize this bear? It is a turkey. Quite easy. And these are the numbers for these offerings, okay? So these are splinters of wood, and this is fire, this is a rubble ball, and it is flame. So this is indicating, and you can see that in Codex Lao, there is a section, I mean, very clear in order to make this prescription of the days. And these are the days. You have to do these offerings in these counted numbers, so to say, to this deity. And the third layer is the character of these newly born children, which is actually almost disappearing. So this is not very, still not used anymore. And the number is the last layer that gives intensity to this, each one of these layers. To give you an example, so we have, for example, the day beach. And it's a relatively good pronostication, so you don't have to worry if you dreamt or you had an event in your life. But it is recommended to go to the cemetery, for example, and to ask and to offer ancestors, make offerings to the dead. Gugon, for example, has definitely a very good augury, and therefore is a very good day to marry. Ka, for example, this jaguar or feline or puma, is rather indifferent, so it's one of those days that also you don't have to worry much if you had some experience. But it may be good for ancestors, so not as good as, for example, beach. But the kids, the children that are born on Ka, these are the stubborn, the disobedient children that you I mean, are rebels, so they are very brave, and that coincides also with the character of the felines. And for example, Toots is definitely not a good day. I mean, if you dreamt something, if you had some presage, you have to worry, because it might be that there are some ancestors. I put here grandparents, because the word for in Ayok for ancestor is grandparents. Is up. So you need to be worried, because maybe it's a message from them that they are telling you, well, we are hungry, we need attention, and you need to go to the cemetery. Or maybe somebody is causing harm. And just here I will make a parenthesis also regarding the personhood and to explain why some people might harm you. And this is because of the Havin and the Tzok. And the Havin is this essential energy that we everybody is born with, and this is the energy that comes from the sun, so this is given on the day you were born. And when you are sick, this essential energy is simply disconnected from you. It can't be removed, so it is not attached to your body anymore. So you feel sick, that's why you feel sick, and therefore you need one of these shemailas in order to restore that balance. But at the same time, the Havin is an alter ego. So on the same day, an animal or a natural force was born. And that alter ego will have the same destiny as you. If you, if that animal suffers a disease, if for example, it may be a rabbit. If that rabbit breaks a leg, you will be sick as well. Of course, if that rabbit is dead, you will be dead as well. And you will be sharing that destiny throughout all your life. And you experiment this life of this having through dreams. And for example, if you have dreams with flying, it most probably you are a bird. I mean, your having is a bird. But there are the having, most of the people have friendly animals. So you can have a rabbit, a frog, a fish, but there are other people that are havins more powerful, and those can be pumas, owls, eagles, or fire serpents, and fire serpents are lightning. So these have powers, so to say, and they are the ones that can go to the other world and frighten you during your sleep. So they visit you during your sleep, and they just cause this imbalance between your having, between your spirit and your body. In the Aztec world, maybe you have heard of the word Nahuales. Well, these are the Nahuales. So these are the persons that maybe during dreams are sending you these messages with events that happen in daily life, but also during dreams. Now, once you consult, you know, this shemaiva, because, well, you are feeling sick, you had this dream, she will ask you, when did you have this dream? Did you have other experience? Did you have a quarrel with somebody in the community, maybe? Because, well, we can may suspect of a dog trying to harm you. So we are not sure. And as a doctor would do, she would ask for a verification of that, the pronostication. So this is where maize starts to take place. And to read maize is called Mokhbehbe, so it is literally divine with maize. And just to go back a little bit with codices as well, it is said that the calendar and the maize divination were born together. And for the women, it was given for this deity, Oshomoko, who is the lady, was given the arts of reading maize, and for the men, Sipaktono, the arts of curing, and also the arts of writing these books and knowing the calendar. And we see it also in Spanish sources that this maize divination was also very well described in pretty much the same fashion as it happens nowadays. Well, we have a lady throwing the mazes in front of a deity in darkness, so this is sky, stellar eyes, so this is she going to the other world. And a sick person, you can see here she's crying, and the description of the Spaniards are pretty much as it happens today. I mean, it is trying to verify this prognostication of the day. So if it's verifying, if it's somebody harming, it is just that you didn't fulfill the ritual norms, so you need to do them. And there are other, I put this slide because there are other systems of divination that didn't persist. So like rope divination, and now that I see the work of Alex, it made me think of maybe it was similar. Because this is the only image that we have of this rope divination. Nobody is doing that anymore. Other systems, obsidian mirrors, and still other communities in Mesoamerica do maize divination. Actually, it's very more well preserved than the calendar, but they do it differently. Okay, so that is also the diversity. So now, in order to understand this maize divination, we need to understand the anatomy of this kernels. So we have an ovary. So if we look at a maize, it has a concavity at one side, and that is a good sign, more or less. I mean, most of the time would be a good sign or a live entity, but on the other side it is rather flat. So that stands for an ancestor or a rather negative outcome. So for me, it's like these are agents, either alive or dead. And they also stand and represent real situations or feelings. And also deception, love, abandonment, gossips, triumph, abundance, money, these type of things. But they are always open. And I like also whenever you want to consult the Shemaive, you will ask, Otsun hon ingiel ishet. So that means literally, I want to see what is the things that are in my life, like in the course of my life. And I want to stress the see. It is be able to see things that you are not able to see, because we are rather blind of what we are experiencing when we are afflicted. So for me as well, that's why I make comparisons with psychology sometimes, because these shamanists become like psychologists. They are truly therapists whenever they face these afflicted persons. And as I told you before, it's not random that maize is the principal tool, because maize comes from earth, and earth is the principal deity among the Ayok. Everything is because of her, and she is an omniscient entity. She knows and sees everything, because when you are born, and women in Mesoamerica are born and go to labor kneeling or crunching. So the baby is received downwards, and earth is the first entity that sees that child, even before the mother. And so you start walking on earth, you start playing on earth, you eat that maize from earth, and eventually you will die and you will return to earth. And so there is nothing you can do, but earth will always be watching you. And so maize becomes the tool and this vehicle where the Shemaivas can know, and actually from the maize divination it is revealed what you cannot see. And so they pick 16 or 18 seeds, and then they use the napkins action that they embroider frequently in the community. They use it to grab tortillas, and so that becomes a geographical space. And you place, there are two ways of throwing maize: either you throw them all together, or either you put one of these alive mazes in the center, and this becomes you, the consultant. And this is your back, I mean this is your left side, the right side. These are your eyes, so this is your front. So this is an actual representation of you or the person that you want to consult about. Not necessarily the north or the south, because the world is not conceived as our Cartesian, of course, Western way of conceiving the world. But it's sometimes it is a geographical space. And so with logic and with the questions that the Shemaive does, well, then she is throwing either just all the seeds at once or just placing it one and then throwing the rest towards the consultant. And then you end up with configuration of these maize seeds. So this is the consultant, and this is not a very good outcome because you end up facing directly to one of these not good or ancestors. So it might be, depending on what she is asking to the consultant, I mean, if that person is having dreams related to ancestors, well, most probably this is an ancestor, no? That it is asking for attention. But sometimes it's maybe just bad luck, no? So once you are able to identify these signs, then you go into the symbols. I have this semiotic way, because I come from visual culture studies as well. I have this semiotic way of understanding this reading maze. So from one sign, you go to an interpretation. You go to the symbol. Another example, this is also not a very good pronostication because here it is you, and you end up with one of these disease mazes on top of you. And that is clearly not a good pronostication. Or this, whenever you end up with a standing up maze, it is confirming also that bad pronostication. This is also another example. This is my consultation, by the way. There was some moments when I was able to enter to these very intimate places of reading maze, and I was able to understand it. By the way, one of these ladies taught me how to read the maze. She was very generous and she told me, oh, you can read it, you understand it, so you can read it. And she was explaining to me, and she didn't know where Holland was, but she told me, well, here you have to travel. Clearly, this is you, away from the bunch of the other seeds, and it's clear that you have to go to very far away. It seems like you have to go through earth. No, I mean, it was not the water, but it was earth, and she was not mistaken, but she told me, well, you're, and this was a good pronostication for me, because she said to me, well, you are free, your path is free, so you won't have obstacles. I mean, this is a good pronostication. Also, this is when, in this article that I told you before, I am trying to make the comparison with these codices. And this is also why I sometimes make the comparisons with tarot, because you end up with images. For me, once you cast these mazes, you end up with images. Whenever you are able to identify the signs, then you make an interpretation, but that interpretation is always open. It's the same with codices. As you can see, they are highly pictographic, so it is not that you can pronounce exactly what the codex is telling you. They are always open, and that's why they are always very ambiguous. For example, in the case of consulting marriage, so maybe you go to the shaman and say, well, I want to know if I should marry this or this person. So you put the two kernels right and next to each other, and then you end up with good seeds all around. And this can be interpreted as abundant, but mainly as children, like we see here in the codex. So we have the lady, the man, they are supported by the deities here, but they are connected with precious cords. Here the baby in the pot, a shining sun, here the paraphernalia of a ritual, the self-blood sacrifice tool. So this is a good allegory, at the same fashion as you would read maize. Another example, but this is not a very good one. So you end up here with one of these seeds going to the other side, facing another living seed. Again, here the pronostication is confirmed, and as you can see here in the codex, this as well is quite explicit, so I don't need to explain this. The man naked with a naked woman, here the lady with the paraphernalia of ritual, so this is the devoted wife, but of course the man, instead of a penis, he has the tail of a coral snake. The paraphernalia for ritual, there is a coral snake, and of course the lady here. So it is quite here telling that, well, you will suffer infidelity, so you don't have to marry this or that man or woman. So it is not only, well, this approach of being open, because it's never a univocal speech. It is always constructed by the dialogue with the consultant. Of course, the Shemaida doesn't receive the inspiration just by herself. It is in this recognizing what are different agents and different problems in that certain situation, and they together make this dialogue. That is why I use Bakhtin in this creating the narrativity. And also in Bakhtin, I find it very well illustrative, the time and space elements. So you have the napkin and you have, of course, the calendar connection with time and space. So that's why I sometimes they also get into that those narrativity theories. And just to end, as you can imagine, nothing ends there. So as you would go to the doctor, and then it is now clear that maybe you are facing bad luck and you are sick because you didn't fulfill the ritual norms and you didn't pay attention to ancestors, so there comes a prescription. So as a doctor would tell you, well, now you have to take this medicine. Well, the medicine is doing the rituals. And doing the rituals implies to do the offerings. Special, some of them very special, turkeys or roosters, and special maize food, and counting offerings. So I won't develop more in the ritual aspect because we could do another session about the ritual involved. But and you also have to go on special days accompanied by the Shemaida that will tell you, okay, you need to do this type of ritual on that specific day, on that special sacred place. And most of the sacred places are mountains, because mountains are the extensions of this earth deity. In regarding ancestors, you will have to go into caves and do these offerings inside the cave. But caves are portals to this on the other world or to earth. And as you can imagine, well, in the case of special petitions, of course, you will have to go to the most sacred place among the Mi'kmaq, and that is the Mehkop Kam or the Tsempo Tepet, and you will have to go in the best day of all, and this is 10 serpent. And to climb there, it requires quite an effort, 5 hours climbing, and these special offerings, as you can imagine, there is a sacrifice of a bird. These offerings of maize food are impregnated by this blood and are placed inside earth, I mean, in a hole in earth. And candles, in the case of ancestors, for example, I told you before, ancestors are very hungry. They usually are very hungry, and so they want literally the food to be placed on the grave, and also with mezcal. What's mezcal is kind of the tequila, now very popular in Mexican culture. So they want to drink that alcoholic beverage, and of course the ceremonial speech around it. And guess what? We also see that in codices, no? So we have this section of the prescribed counting offerings, the rituals of blood. So this is the quail, so this is the bird that is going to be sacrificed with the speech to the four directions of the world, tobacco. And until 85, there was a similar structure of these rituals with splinters of blood, of wood that were sparkled with this blood, but also were burned. And just to end as a conclusion, I would just end, well, just to tell you that to preserve this knowledge in Mesoamerica is quite fascinating, quite impressive, because after 500 years of colonization and the strong imposition of Catholicism still, and as Matthias said in the beginning, yeah, it is true that the Mi'kmaq therefore claim that they were never conquered. Of course, they are not exempt of this hybridity between Catholicism and Mesoamerican religion. We can see it clearly, these links with Mesoamerican religion, but they do have the mentioning of the Virgin Mary, of Jesus, of well, the saints, of course, but they lost these records and these tools for memory that were the codices, but still they didn't, the Spanish didn't, weren't able to destroy the minds and the memories of these women. So I thank you a lot for your attention.